goes into a public school and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
There were once two boys who went to the same public school where there were fierce rivals who spent all their time insulting each other. After they left school, one went into the Navy and the other into the Church. Because they had the right sort of education, they both did well in their chosen careers, one becoming an admiral and the other a bishop. One day, both dressed in their full regalia, they met on a railway platform, both waiting for the same train. The bishop turned to the admiral and said, "Excuse me, porter, does this train go to Crewe?" The admiral replied, "Yes, it does, madam, but are you sure you should be travelling in your condition?"
Boys, it's time for Latin. Now, if you were reading a Latin text and you came across the letters L, X, 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 can anyone tell me what they would mean?
Love and kisses. A famous pop star received head injuries in a crash, and when he got to hospital, the doctor told a young nurse to cut his hair off so that the extent of the damage could be seen. Well, she was very nervous as he slipped away at her idol's tangled mop. After a moment or two, she couldn't help saying, "Good heavens, I didn't know you went to Winchester." And the pop star said, "Well, how did you know I did?" She said, "Well, I just got to your cap." The master went through his first class of the morning where all the boys were making a terrible row. "I won't begin," he said, "until this room settles down." And the voice in the back shouted, "Then why don't you go home and sleep it off?"
The public school system is supposed to be one of the bastions of privilege and inequality in this country. And I suppose by devoting a whole program to it, we could be accused of perpetuating its outdated injustices. On the other hand, public schools are institutions which have, over the years, prompted a great deal of humorous comment, and very little of it has been unreservedly complimentary. For instance, here's Henry Fielding's views.
Public schools are the nurseries of all vice and immorality.
William Cooper.
Public schools, 'tis public folly feeds.
And the product of the public schools was not met with an unqualified approval. G.K. Chesterton.
His English education at one of the great public schools had preserved his intellect perfectly and permanently at the stage of boyhood.
Henry Seton, writing in the 19th century.
He was the product of an English public school and university. He had little education and highly developed muscles. That is to say, he was no scholar, but essentially a gentleman.
There's nothing wrong with being a gentleman, or indeed a lady. Not at the same time, of course. It is only natural that parents want the best schooling available for their offspring. A report from the Daily Mirror.
Her mother told the court, "I was dismayed when I was told my daughter had hidden a knife in her brassiere. This would not have happened if she'd not gone to a secondary modern school."
But if she'd gone to a girls' public school, she would have hidden the dagger somewhere else. Anyway, this view of public schools may be outdated. Hear the opinion of Anthony Nelson, MP, quoted in the News of the World.
"It taught me such a lot being at Harrow. You meet such a cross-section of society there."
And perhaps parents should have the right to choose which cross-section of society their children mix in. Mind you, it pays to shop around. It's always a good idea to go and see the headmaster and find out what's available.
Here is my brochure. Just glance through it for a few moments, would you?
Well, that's very interesting. It's a photograph of the school. Well, say, the fire escape doesn't look very safe in this picture.
It's a lot safer in the picture than it is on the building.
Is it examined every week?
It's used every week.
Tell me, is this school co-educational?
You can't battle me with long words.
No, I mean, do the boys and girls share the same curriculum?
No, we had separate ones built.
Well, how do you segregate the sexes?
If you must know, I go around with a crowbar and I prize them apart.
Oh, dear, I don't think this will suit my Basil. You see, he's very sensitive and he's never been separated from his mother.
He hasn't? Have you read what Havelock Ellis has to say about that?
No.
Then I'll show you. It's disgusting.
Oh, well, I don't think I'll see it now.
Then I'll send you a copy in the plain wrapper. No one would know.
I must tell you that my boy is very delicate and there is something I would like to know. Are your dormitories dry?
They are after 11 p.m. Then they get drinks if they buy sandwiches.
I see. Tell me, what types of pupil do you have here?
We have two types of pupil, Class A and Class B. At mealtime, the Class B boys get priority.
And the Class A boys?
They get food.
You mean to tell me that the Class B boys don't eat?
I never pry into their private lives. Perhaps you'd like to see one of our typical pupils. Farnsworth?
Farnsworth!
This is Farnsworth, one of our better 8-year-olds. He is 29. You may go, Farnsworth.
Thank you, sir.
Hurry along.
Tell me, the teaching the books, is that on the Montessori system?
Sometimes, but I find that most people prefer to pay cash.
Then you have no syllabus of your own.
I don't think it concerns you how I choose to spend my leisure. As it happens, we are just good friends.
Seems very confusing. Your answers aren't a bit like the ones I received from the headmaster at Winchester.
Oh, you've been hawking your breath around, have you?
No, it's not that. It's just that I want something to suit his personality. I'm looking for something progressive.
Well, we encourage children to be children. You may not realize it, sir, but some of our greatest men started life as children. Ah, there goes the bell for prep. One of the subjects we specialize in, prep. Some of my boys speak it like a native.
Mr. Headmaster, I'm going to be brutally frank with you. Have you got a record of juvenile delinquency?
Singing what?
No, I mean I want something to prove to me that the boys here have strengthened their personality.
Well, perhaps you would like to hear the school choir. Miss Pringle, I wonder if you would oblige.
Peter Sellers with Peter Sellers and Peter Sellers, all voices by Peter Sellers, written 30 years ago by a couple of hacks whose names escape me at the moment. Maybe public schools are becoming increasingly democratic, or maybe just the old class discrimination has been replaced by new forms of discrimination. Lord Summers.
The only thing that bars one from going to a public school today is a matter of money. But so far as class distinction is concerned, it is absolutely fictitious. There is no such thing.
Whatever their qualifications for getting there, public school boys are supposed to retain a certain quality as they go through life, something that distinguishes them from other people. For a start, public school chaps seem to stick together. A small ad from the Times.
A brace of gentlemen needed for Onslow Square flat. Must be public school, English, Tory, and heterosexual.
And in later life, they don't forget their faces of education. A report from the Evening Standard.
Sir Oliver Leese's appointment to command the 8th Army makes our Mediterranean War an Eton and Harrow affair.
Above all, public school chaps learn a code of conduct which stays with them through all the dangers of life. Here's a stirring verse by J.B. Morton.
The captain stood on his bridge alone with his telescope to his eye. The ship, she was sinking rapidly as the storm went howling by. He saw the rush for the lifeboats and he noticed a pier, old and grey. Then a sailor approached and saluted, and thus to the pier he did say, "Pray take my place in the lifeboat. 'Tis a gesture I willingly make, since I fag for your nephew at Repton. It's the least I may do for his sake. And when next, sir, you're seeing your nephew, pray sing him this short refrain: Piddock Minor went down like a Repton man, and gladly he blew it again."
Here's death before dishonor, very much part of the old traditional public school code. That sort of scale of values tends to colour the public school man's attitude to everything. Report from the Sunday Times.
I lent Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment to a friend to read, and when I asked him how he liked it, he commented, "None of this would have happened if they'd been to an English public school."
Now, the thought of dishonouring the school would have held them back, as it would all right-minded fellows. Here's some news from the Sunday Express.
Before being sentenced at Winchester yesterday to 3 months' jail on a burglary charge, he pleaded not to be sent to prison. "My old school has a very honored name, sir," he said. "If you have to send me to prison, I shall be the first old boy who's ever had such an indignity."
Anyway, people who've been to the right schools may not mix properly in criminal circles.
Here's a more recent report from the East Anglian Daily Times.
The 70-year-old boy who was expelled from the Essex Public School for smoking cannabis was told by Mr. Justice Thesiger, "I always doubt whether someone of a public school education gains much from Borstal training. He may even be in danger through being regarded by others as a potential leader of escape by virtue of his superior education."
All this makes one wonder how easy it is to get into these schools. They seem to have such a profound effect on their pupils' lives. Here is Winston Churchill's experience.
"I wrote my name at the top of the page. I wrote down the number of the question one. After much reflection, I put a bracket round it. But thereafter, I could not think of anything connected with it that was either relevant or true. It was from these slender indications of scholarship that Mr. Weldon drew the conclusion that I was worthy to pass into Harrow. It is very much to his credit."
Once having been accepted to the school, there then follows the great excitement of the first day, an experience both thrilling and threatening.
"Come along, Anthony. Lift your cases down."
"Right home, Ezra. I'm ready."
"Anthony, this is the first time you've been away from home. You must be a brave little soldier."
"No, I will, Miss, I will."
"I want you to promise to write to me every week. Study hard and don't get into bad company."
"Yes, Miss, I'll try jolly hard to make myself a credit to you and Peter."
"Oh, your father would have been proud to see you now. He worked so hard so that he could send you to a school like this."
"Yes. What a pity he got caught."
"Oh, why, oh, why did the inspector have to jump on his tram and check the tickets just at that moment?" "Go now, Auntie."
Mother, you're crying."
"Am I?"
"Yes." Mother, don't cry. I'll be all right."
"It's not that, Anthony."
"Then why, Mother, pray? Why are you crying?" "Oh,
the pots are open. I've left my handbag behind."
"Excuse me, young sir. Are you for Greystone?"
"Yes, that's right."
"I'm Perkins. So I drive the horse and trap up to the school. Give me your cases and we'll set off."
"Goodbye, Mother."
"Goodbye. My darling."
"No, please, no. Mother, please. No. No, please. Look, give half a crown. Nip in the off license and buy yourself a miniature."
"Are you ready, young sir?"
"Coming."
"Goodbye, Mater. Goodbye, Anthony. Goodbye."
Cheer up, young sir. You'll soon settle down when you meet the other young gentleman."
"What is Greystones like, Perkins?"
"Oh, a fine place, sir. Battles are won and lost on the playing fields of Greystone. So say the village girls."
Tony Hancock, Hattie Jakes, and Kenneth Williams. There used to be many temptations for new boys at public schools, particularly boarding schools. Let us now hear a terrible story of corruption. Corruption of the Young, from that great Victorian book of moral instruction, Dean Farrar's Eric or Little by Little.
"I hurry over a part of my subject inconceivably painful. I hurry over it, but if I'm to perform my self-imposed duty of giving a true picture of what school life sometimes is, I must not pass it by altogether. The first time Eric heard indecent words in dormitory number 7, he was shocked beyond bound or measure. Dark though it was, he felt himself blushing scarlet to the roots of his hair and then growing pale again, while a hot dew was left upon his forehead. Now, Eric, now or never. Life and death, ruin and salvation, corruption and purity are perhaps in the balance together, and the scale of destiny may hang on a single word of yours. Speak out, boy. Tell these fellows that unseemly words wound your conscience. Tell them they are ruinous, sinful, damnable. Speak out and save yourself and the rest. Virtue is strong and beautiful, Eric, and vice is downcast in her awful presence. Lose your purity of heart, Eric, and you've lost the jewel which the whole world, if it were well entire and perfect, crystallized, cannot replace, and moreover..."
Goes on like that for pages. And it was just over a couple of naughty words. Incidentally, those of you who are caught up in the plot, I regret to tell you that Eric didn't speak out. As Dean Farrar puts it,
"It was too late to speak now, Eric Forth. The moment passed by forever. Eric had listened without objection to foul words, and the irreparable harm was done.
Just give you a moment to think about that, and then given such temptation round every corner for the unsuspecting new boy, it is best the school should be run by an efficient disciplinarian. The boys can get the measure of the opposition from their headmaster's beginning of term address.
Well, boys, I'm delighted to welcome you all back for a new term, and I hope it'll be a very happy and successful one for you all. Who did that? I'm waiting. I have no intention of continuing until the boy who did that earns up. If the boy who did that does not earn up, I shall be forced to continue. Well, very well, I shall continue. I would like to welcome four new members of the staff this term, but I could only get two. Now, Mr. Jones, who is a grammar school man, though none the worse for that, stop laughing. We'll be taking the middle school and all the fruiting little subjects that nobody else wants to teach. And I'm sure that he will be an invaluable member of the staff. And in time, a valuable one. And if I catch any boys laughing at Mr. Jones' deformity, I shall punish them. Even if it is funny. Oh, and Chaplin, there's a broken window in the changing room. Mend that, please. It's part of your job. Watson, get your hair cut. Now, second, in place of Monsieur Boisrenault, our late French teacher, we have engaged Mr. Mboko. And now, this will be the first time that our syllabus has included Swahili. But we hope to resume French again next term. Incidentally, some of you boys may be interested to know that until last week, Mr. Mboko was Prime Minister of Chad. And on weekday mornings, he will teach the sixth form Swahili. And on weekday afternoons, they will teach him English.
John Cleese. The staff of public schools have heavy moral as well as academic responsibilities, but thank goodness they do get time to relax as well. Here's a report from The Guardian.
The willow tree is much favoured by Eton masters as well as by the non-academic staff of the school and the local community. Mr. Forster, who has been host of the willow tree for 7 years, said he did not want to leave because the pleasantness of the masters, and there are some very nice normal folks here as well.
I'm not sure that the pleasantness of the masters is the reason my school days are traditionally supposed to be the happiest of your life, but lots of people do look back to school with sentimental nostalgia. Charles Lamb.
I've had playmates, I've had companions in my days of childhood, in my joyful school days. All are gone, the old familiar faces.
Mind you, the old familiar faces come back with awful clarity if you ever go to a school reunion.
I think it's Patsy, isn't it? Yes, I thought so. I don't suppose you remember me. Yes, that's right. Lumpy Latimer. You know, I don't think anyone's called me that for years. Too ghastly. Oh, well, my name is now Clinch. I married a man called Keith Clinch, and we've been living out in Kenya. You have to call it Kenya now, you know. We've been out there for years. Only now the children have grown up and settled and back here in England, so we've come too. Yes, I think we are going home this sun, quite rightfully. Yes, I am, by way of going into the tea. What fun. Are you going? Oh, well, let's all gather. What fun, fantastic. Absolutely love that. I knew Miss Davidson. Frightfully nice to see you. Yes, that's right. Love to that so much. You know, I'd quite forgotten until I met Patsy Villa. She's here. And she says, well, my name is now Clinch, as in boxing. I married a man called Keith Clinch, and we've been living out in Kenya. You have to call it Kenya now. And we're more or less home, I think. You know, sort of to Keith, probably. Yes, I am going to miss the sun quite rightly. I have to buy myself a woolly vest. Are you by any chance going into the tea? Oh, good. Well, Patsy's going, so perhaps we could all look for each other. Well, I think that'd be lovely. Yes, lovely. Yes, marvellous. Yes. Excuse me, aren't you Wendy Plackett? Yes, I thought you were. I don't suppose you remember. Yes, that's right. Love to Latimer. Oh, well, it's Clint now, as in boxing. I married a man called Keith Clint, and we've been living... No, not in the odd time. No, in Kenya. Yes, they are both awfully funny, aren't they? Yes, we are settled here. I am going to miss the sun, frightfully. Yes. Wendy, what's your name now? Still Wendy Blackett. Oh, well, it's a lovely name. Yes. I say, isn't that girl who used to be in the dorm with us, Flavia something? Do you remember? We all thought she was so glamorous because she sleepwalked. and she was quite so good at elocution. Do you remember? I've never forgotten her as King Lear. Oh, and there's Mamselle. Oh, I must have a tiny word in her ear. I'm going into the tea, Wendy. Well, let's go together. Well, look, wait for me, will you, one sec? I must just have a tiny word with Mamselle. I really... Hello, Mamselle. Oh, c'est très gentil de vous voir. Oui, c'est ça. Love to that, ma. After maintenant, ce suis appelé Clash. Et nous sommes ici en Angleterre. Oui, non, pas beaucoup de soleil, non. C'est très gentil de vous voir, mademoiselle, très. Oh, Wendy, isn't she nice? I wonder why they hated her. I don't know what they mean.
Joyce Grenfell. Yes, why not? One of the enduring images of life in public schools is that of violence administered by both boys and masters, some of it justified, some of it less justified. Corporal punishment can, according to some educationists, be a great spur to learning. Here's Dr. Johnson's view.
There is now less flogging in our great schools than formerly, but then less is learned there, so that what the boys get at one end, they lose at the other.
The flogging isn't always used for a noble educational purpose. A memory from the early 17th century writer, Henry Peacham.
I knew one schoolmaster who in winter would ordinarily, on a cold morning, whip his boys over for no other purpose than to get himself a heat.
But any confrontation between a schoolboy and a master with a cane is bound to be a bit daunting.
Come in. Rawlings have brought distinction and credit to this school. Your father, your grandfather, and your great-grandfather have all in their time been head boy of the school. You yourself are in line for this privilege when Whitwell leaves the school next year and goes up to Oxford to study forestry. However, Rawlings, I'm very disappointed to hear from Mr. Esprey, the physical training master, that a pair of very valuable gymnasium slippers disappeared from the stockroom Tuesday last and reappeared in your desk next door to a spick-and-span summer extra annual for 1958.
Yes, sir. A copy of Razzle, sir.
And a copy of Razzle,
sir.
Well, thank goodness you're man enough and honest enough to admit that. Some consolation in this sordid little affair, Rawlings. But you have any explanation for the appearance of these slippers in your desk other than the one that immediately springs to mind?
No, sir. I wanted the slippers, sir, and I took them.
You wanted the slippers, Rawlings, and you took them?
Sir.
Yes. Rawlings, do you realize what would happen if in this world people took exactly what they wanted?
Sir.
We'd be living in a state of anarchy, in a whole moral fiber society of four parts. You feel you're in some way unique to divorce from this basic moral law?
Yes, sir.
Ah. Well, Rawlings, I'm afraid if anyone calls in to me, I'm going to have to punish you very severely. I'm going to have to ask you to bend over and take six of the best.
Yes, sir. Could I just say one thing, sir?
Well, come on, Rawlings, doesn't it?
Well, although I did take the slipper, sir, and although I deserve to be punished, sir, you're quite right. You're much older and wiser than I am, sir.
Come on, Rawlings.
I'm much bigger than you are, sir. And if you lay a finger on me, I'll smash your stupid little face.
Rawlings, this was a completely different confession. I mean, my dear chap, why didn't you tell me all this before? I'd like you to accept on behalf of the school the packet of cigarettes, certainly in a lavatory at your end. This £5, let's go down to the tap
Peter called him Dudley Moore. We'll just close with two short quotations. Public schools, as we've said, are bastions of tradition. The sort of thing exemplified by this report from the Shropshire Star.
Stoke Crown Court heard that it was a school tradition to make up allegations of indecent assault against the headmaster.
And finally, a thought from Sarkey.
For good gracious, you've got to educate him first. I mean, you can't expect a boy to be vicious till he's been to a good school.
Coming, signora. Frank Muir Goes Into Public School was written by Frank Muir and Simon Brett and produced by Jeffrey Perkins.
Radio 740, CBC Toronto.